It's Monday, October 5th, 2020, and you're listening to episode 552 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 4 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
And I'm Blodor.
Broder, when are you going to do a game notes for me?
You know, it's funny, Wayne. I was actually thinking about that. So as vain as this is going to sound, I've been listening to episodes here and there of game notes to try to get a voice for game notes because I know exactly what I want to talk about. I want to talk about getting chocolate in my peanut butter and vice versa because apropos for this conversation, I'm working on the first AP for my website, goinfo.org, and we're doing a military game, but I'm putting a spin on a game where I'm going to get a little bit of peanut butter and things. So I'm pretty stoked about it. So yeah, soon maybe.
I feel like this whole segment was spoken in code that I don't have the code.
I was weirdly nervous the whole time too. I was just waiting for the
tapestry of profanity to descend. Yeah,
I was just waiting for something else to get added to the
talking
list.
About peanut butter, not even talking about dogs. I mean, I expected something far worse.
So Chad has proselytized Blades of the Dark.
Yeah.
Right. And John Harper's game. So Strosh something or other, whose name I'm not going to pronounce, he wrote a game based on the Blades in the Dark engine or Forged in the Dark called Band of Blades, which is basically Black Company, but actually interesting. And
wow,
my buddies and I are playing it. We recorded 4 episodes of the AAP, but they never saw the light of day because from episode 1, session 1, I want this game to be 40K. I love the bleak, ugly, hideous, constantly in route. You know, the objective is to escape and get back to this one point of operation to defend against the enemy. And I was like, I have to play this with Astra Militarum during some terrible warp catastrophe. Well, 40K universe has had a terrible warp catastrophe. The Imperium has been rent asunder, split in two. And the latest edition of 40K came out. So I was like, fuck it. So I've been doing a ton of research on 40K, but also watching actual plays of this game so I can get the proverbial peanut butter in my chocolate.
Yeah. That was all very professional and talking.
Yeah.
It was.
What happened to the Broder we know and
it's
love?
It's like he has this professional website and service.
That was. I guess the problem, I don't want to get into that website. It's goinfo.org. Yeah. Right. So I just want to be adored. That's what I really want. What I really, really need. I am such a small, pathetic, petty, sad little person that what I need is I need to open my libs and stats and I just need to see him rise. That's all I need.
Are you asking for pity listeners?
Listen, I'm an abject whore, Chad. I don't care if you actually listen. I need stats. I just need raw data to sell to advertisers. That's what I need.
Just download. Don't have to listen.
Now, if you actually care and you're interested, I would.
There is actual content.
I've dropped 12 episodes of my interview show, Why We Game. I've talked.
So this is a podcast that you do interviews of.
Yes, it's
people.
Me, Brodor, as Brodor, interviewing people who are gamers who became game professionals.
Dan has been on it. His brother has been on it.
I intend for you guys to be on it at some point here and there. I would love to get all the principal Fear the Boot hosts. But yeah,
except for Hussey.
Yeah. Well, see, he's a vile, creepy, sort of mummy-looking creature. I'm frightened. No, I'm kidding. I love Chris.
Hussey has sent me 2 Game Notes episodes.
Yeah. I haven't listened to either of those.
Well, I've only released 1 of them.
But I listened to Dan because it's going to sound so fucking hacky, but he's so good. I mean, when he's on, he is on. And he was on that episode of Game Notes for sure. It was really good.
It was the easiest episode to edit out of all of them I've ever edited because Dan has done so much editing that when he talks in a way where you can cut things out without it, you know, sounding weird. You can move things around. It is so easy to edit Dan compared to me or Chad or Hussey or anyone else I've edited.
Yeah, it's the difference between the way you take care of a rental car or a house when you're a kid.
Look, you can see it on the screen. Look at those beautiful clean breaks between his words.
Yeah. Brodor's pointing at the Audacity sound.
And mine is just this sloppy, erratic. It's like how I f**k. It's just this ugly,
there we go. There
frenetic,
it is.
Yep. Erratic thing that doesn't make any sense. But someone satisfied. I don't know who. I mean, they weren't in the room.
You're satisfied. That's the...
You know, and then when you get your own house or your own car, right, you're paying for it, you take a different level of care of it. And it's the same kind of thing that you edit yourself, and pretty soon you are your own problem and you have to clean up your own messes. And so you learn habits to make yourself easier to deal with.
So you're working on getting Skies of Glass to eventual public consumption. And Wayne's working on Game Notes and doing a lot of work with you behind the scenes in VC to do Skies of Glass product. I'm trying to get my interview podcasts, you know, just really, I just want your adoration thing off the ground. When's our next RPG, Chad?
I'm not working on anything right now. I'm working on my body.
Oh, and your body is, I mean, it's toy.
Labor Day, man, I'm going to hit my record, 400-pound squat.
That's two of me.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, at this point, it's just over two of me, but...
Yeah, you lost a lot of weight. You look great.
Thanks, man.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. I've been trying to do those crunches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, looks great. That's the thing. No, I'm totally serious.
Well, you can see it now.
No. I'm totally serious. I'm totally, totally serious.
This is not a negative episode.
Now,
you know what? This is not a negative episode. If this is something you really need to regret this phrase,
no.
But flesh out, we can do that in a negative episode.
Okay, fine. Here's all I'm saying is that it's been really good for my knees.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really good for my back.
Yep.
And
that's all. That's all it has improved.
And point.
The muscles don't work that way, but we're not going to debate this. So the topic for today is we're doing a follow-up on episode 550. We were unable to do it for episode 551 because I think it was Wayne was out. Mm-hmm. And so we had Lura filling in for him. She wouldn't shut up about Injustice.
Mm-hmm.
But so in episode 550, we started talking about running a command structure in games, but we focused more specifically on structures such as a bridge crew in games like Traveler, Star Trek, BattleTech, etc. And even within that, we focus very heavily on the role of the captain. And so this episode, we're going to come back and hit a bunch of other angles, including groups that aren't a bridge crew, other ways in which the roles start to matter, so on and so forth. Let's pick up with one that Wayne threw out near the end of the episode, and I told him to put on ice, so we're going to thaw it out now, which is there a virtue to not having the roles set at the start of the game because of the fact that you have not had a chance to play your character yet, and so you don't have a sense of exactly what his or her voice or niche is? And I've got very split feelings on this.
But. Yeah, I suggested something like, you know that the captain is going to die within the first couple sessions, but everybody gets to know their character, and then some amount of bridge crew is going to be killed, and you guys are going to be the next ones promoted up, and at that point decide who gets captain.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you know the characters, and you know what their personalities are. Because some people really don't know their character until they've sat down and played for a few sessions.
I think my one concern, because I like it to a large degree in that it gives you a chance, like you said, to play the character, to find their voice, and by extension to figure out where they best fit into the scheme of things, to let a sort of emergent order appear. But I think the only thing that I would struggle with in that, and this depends on the game, and I can even think of some solutions for this outside of pick a different game, is the characters may be statted a particular way. For example, in the Star Trek RPG that I prefer, the old FASA one, being a commander or a captain requires specific skills, And there is a specific school you go to in Starfleet that preps you to be a captain. And so you can't just feel out. And it's not just captain. Forget just captain. If you want to be the helmsman, there is a specific set of skills and a specific school that you go to for that. If you want to be a red shirt, there is a specific set of skills and a specific school you go to for that. And so just kind of feeling out where you fit in that game doesn't work, or I think it could be difficult to be made to work.
I could see that. When we were talking about the bridge crew, most of the people on the bridge crew are in some level of command.
Sure.
You know, they already have to have
the command department heads.
Yeah.
Right, right. But if we don't know who the captain's going to be, then by extension, we don't know who at least one role is going to be either.
Right.
So, because if we have a helmsman, a doctor, a security chief, and a chief engineer, and one of them is going to be the captain, well, then now we have one role where we don't know who's going to fill that role. Or maybe you have two helmsmen, and what if it's neither of them that ends up becoming the captain? But I think there one of the ways I would suggest getting around that or working with that, I mean, first of all, in some systems, it's not going to matter as much. The skills may not be that granular, or it could be a different scenario. Let's move away from bridge crews. And let's say you're playing a game where you're a group of survivors that survived a 737 crash, and you're just out in the middle of, you know, the Canadian wilderness, and you have to survive for X amount of time until you get rescued or until some.
And all you have is Canadian bacon and no one's eating it.
And Canadian money and no one's taking it.
Right.
Or, you just, maybe that's not, you know, rescue. Maybe it's some weird, I don't know, J.J. Abrams or Christopher Nolan plot where you're not actually. I don't,
great, so we have lens flares and nothing makes sense. Great.
But, you know, the whole order has to emerge. And so it kind of makes sense that no one's really skilled correctly for the role.
Right.
Or going back to Star Trek, like Traveler, has these life phases as you create your character. And it's a little bit more ordered and a little bit less sophisticated than what Traveler does. But you could say, we're going to have a game where everyone is still a cadet. You are all on your cadet cruise, and you've only been through the basic Starfleet Academy. No one's been through a branch school yet. You know, maybe you've picked some electives that imply this is what you want to do, but you've not bought all the way down the skill tree yet.
Like a zero level session.
Yeah.
Right?
And so
sort of like a dungeon crawl classic.
So if you want to get in command, then maybe you have some points in administration or leadership or something like that.
Right.
If you want to be the helmsman, maybe you have a few points in Starship Helm, but you're not guaranteed it. And at the end of that game, then now we see, okay, after this prequel game or series of games,
this aptitude scenario in the holodeck.
Now it's like, okay, now we're all going to actually go to, from this cadet cruise onto our actual branch schools that will now fit the roles that we've discovered our characters are most likely to fill.
I'm learning to like those because we did that in the first arc of the Skies of Glass game. We did it in the second arc, but the second arc we didn't do as big of a time jump.
Mm-hmm.
The first arc we did that where we were all on the boat. We went out on our one mission and then the boat got sunk and burnt and then it's, what, 4 years
five
later,
years, 5 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a kick-ass way to do it in Star Trek for sure.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah, that would give you the chance. And on top of that, I guess it makes a cool character story because you've got those point in helm, but you ended up in engineering. And that's now part of your character story. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to do this and I spent time in it, but it just wasn't for me or it didn't work out or I didn't get that chance I wanted.
Yeah. And all the characters have a shared adventure now.
Or maybe you got really lucky and you were at the right place at the right time and now you're in command, but you are an engineer. You want to work with machines, but there's too much prestige. There's too much whatever on the line and you just can't say, no, I don't want this starship anymore. Just put me in the engine room. That's an interesting story. That's an interesting development. And I think it helps this question that we have here of, yeah, you can pick a job, but you are not your job and your job is not you.
Well, and your rank is not your power dynamic either. I mean, for example, and again, I've never served a day in the military, so I'm just talking out of my ass and telling you, you know, third hand stories. But there's a very common, from what I understand, power dynamic between a new, like a very fresh out of officer candidate school lieutenant and a grizzled sergeant, you know, a gunnery sergeant, somebody who's been an NCO, who's a lifer, who's done this for a long time. Even though the lieutenant outranks the sergeant is really the person everyone's leaning on, the person in charge, right? So you and I, we could play characters, Wayne. You could be the grizzled old sergeant. I can be the wet behind the ears LT. I still am in charge, right? Technically, but you and I, we don't know our characters yet, and we're still figuring out our power dynamic. But I may find myself deferring a lot to you, because even though I found through circumstance of birth and education and wealth that I'm in charge, I don't have the XP or just the natural aptitude to be in charge.
Especially if lives are on the line.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
I know, when I think of a game like this, be it like a Star Trek, your bridge crew traveler, whatever, where the roles, and again, I want to reiterate, you are not your job and your job is not you. You may be like really into your job and it may say a lot about you, but ultimately, that's just a facet of your life.
Sure.
And what I like about games like this, like a military game or a game where there are specific roles, I'm not talking D&D either, where it's like, okay, somebody's got to be the healer and somebody's got to be the tank. I'm talking like social roles, ranks, a hierarchy sort of thing. What I like about that is that going into it, there's a framework. You know where things slot and where things fit. And while that sounds limiting, how can my character grow and expand stuff? It is those sorts of limits that compress a character, challenge a character, hold back a character, motivate a character. It's those pressures of that hierarchy and that structure that make the characters interesting.
Yeah.
It is the problems and the twists and the interesting stuff that help motivate a good character. And when I sit down to these kind of games, I really enjoy the conversation, even though I'm never the captain. I really enjoy the conversations of who is going to be what. Like, again, let's take Star Trek, because it's such an easy example of, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to be helm and I'm going to be, you know, the security officer and I'm going to be communication. It's like, well, do you really want to be helm? I mean, does anybody want to be helm? You don't decide where to go. You don't even decide how fast you go. You just press the button.
Well, no, I want to be like that dude from the Orville that was in the movie Critters, right? Like, I want to thread the needle.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. I want, but I guess I don't want to play Star Trek. I want to play something fun.
But,
wow.
And he shit on Black Company earlier, too. He's going to get some emails. But
good. As long as those emails are accompanied by a download, you send me whatever the you want.
But you see there, too, that's why I think that these structured teams work really well, is because to me, the helmsman, that is the dumbest station, because I can't think of anything. I press the button. Sure, I have an interesting character, great background.
Yeah, off, man, give me the stick.
Yeah.
Give me a heads up display. Boom. Give me the stick. Let me fucking fly this bird.
That is passion. That is interest. It's right there. It's right there. Character's made. It's great.
You know, every helmsman I can think of that I've seen in a game where they have that passion, it's never for being the helmsman of the ship. They always have like their own little ship that they can fly out there.
I was going to say, it's when you have to fly the shuttlecraft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That now suddenly you're much more hands on.
See, I would be addicted to the holodeck, because I would just be going every time I had a moment off. I would just be flying and F-18s and then ejecting and jacking off. Exploding. Just sowing seed.
Wow.
Huh.
Cleaning the holodeck has to be the worst job ever.
I don't think they do.
I have a theory on that, because it requires base matter to do. So I have always just kind of imagined that it just collects that. I mean, forget even Brodor doing that. But I mean, just like any hair you shed in there, or any skin, any skin you shed, or whatever,
or the fiendish AI geneticist that is just harvesting all of that DNA, all of the just gallons and gallons of material.
Okay, we're gonna move on topics before Brodor develops this one too much. Yeah, I think though, to close this one out, that the
rapidly
that ending up in the job you wanted or not getting the job you wanted and having some feeling about that, I mean, it builds both character depth and also a story there.
And see, and that, I guess I don't get the why wait to pick the job sort of thing, because the argument I'm hearing is, well, it takes me several sessions to play my character, get a feel for him. Great. That has nothing to do with your job.
No, I mean, I guess it doesn't, but
the idea being, if you have a group of people and you don't know who is going to be a better leader to be in the command job.
Yeah,
and but I don't think a better leader necessarily makes for a better story.
Right. Does it matter? Because in life, these outcomes are foisted upon you just by circumstance, right? You have to the role that you were dealt, right? So I'm in charge because I'm the lieutenant that was available at this time, right?
Yeah.
You're the head NCO because you're the head NCO of that f-ing platoon, right? And these new guys just got assigned and suck it. That's what it is. And we might not get along ever.
And I'm the surly helmsman who does not want to thread the needle. I hate my job because I just press a button.
Yeah, you're some George Jetson f***ing reject sitting there, that hot ass daughter. Oh, eep, op, ort, aha.
I think I'll always think differently than a lot of you guys around it, because I'm not a fan of command structures in games.
Right.
Never have been.
Well, and I don't want a command structure in every single game I play. Actually, I don't want them in the majority of the games I play. I look at our weekend game. We're playing a supers game. And there's three superheroes, and we're a superhero team, and we have like some sort of associate NPC heroes too. And there is a loose structure. My character is completely built based around being the leader. And there, he is not.
There is a mechanic in the game when everybody, this is masks, when everybody goes into a combat, one of the first things you do is you tell everyone, close your eyes and point to who the leader is. We have never had a consensus on leader.
Right.
If you do, you get bonuses in the combat. And
if they point at my character, they get additional bonuses based on the mechanics of my character.
But we've never had all of them agree who the leader is. And I love it.
Great. Now, it's wonderful.
Is it an out-of-character bit?
It's an out-of-character bit that you play in character.
I gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Where if, let's say, everybody pointed at me, which would never happen.
Right, because you're the right choice.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the right choice, and I'm also...
Mechanically,
yeah.
Yeah.
And if they would point at me, it's just like, okay, on the meta level, my character's the leader. Now, I have to play it, at least for a little bit, that I am leading, and that you guys are like, okay, Brodor, use your heat beam to melt a hole in that wall. Wayne, you know, use your hacking skills to take out the security system, and... It doesn't have to stay that way, obviously, but that's kind of the implication.
Wayne, I'm going to make a somewhat counter argument to what you just said. Now, I personally don't have a problem with command structures, but that's not actually the exact point I'm going to make, because I want to attack this from a different angle, which is I think that command structures are present in every game you play anyway. Human beings organize. Let's go back to the example that we gave earlier of we're playing a group of survivors from a Boeing 737 crash out in the middle of the Canadian wilderness. Someone who has the strongest personality, the biggest presence, maybe either has or at least claims to have the most relevant skills, that person's going to end up, I mean, maybe they don't have codified authority. Maybe technically no one's in charge out here.
That's the difference.
But they're effectively in charge.
There's a huge difference between somebody stepping up, showing leadership, and everyone choosing to follow.
Yeah.
Versus this is the person that is in command and has authority over these people. And maybe the command structure goes a couple deep with
you're talking about like a chain of command.
Yes.
Not leaders and followers. Well, and there's nothing wrong with a leader and there's nothing wrong with the followers.
I think that example also gives a somewhat of a counterpoint to what Chad was saying, though not totally, which is this is a situation where in character and out of character both, the group is going to want the right person for the right job. If they're going to appoint somebody to say, okay, you have to go out there and keep the wolf pack at bay, they're not going to send Granny to do it. And the fact that Granny's out there writing blog posts about how bad her arthritis is and how much she hates this job, that's not character development. Mm-hmm. That's insanity. Now, in the example, Star Trek, you enrolled in engineering school and got kicked out of engineering school and ended up in helm school. Then, okay, that's a sort of a different story and a different opportunity. And maybe being the wrong person for that job, it's a possible story. But, you know, if you have something, once again, like a survivor type situation, someone who is just horribly wrong for a job. I mean, if you have to build shelter and collect food and there happens to be one person in there who's a big camper and hiker and pseudo survivalist, well, you're going to pick that person. You're not going to look at the person who's the band teacher and say, you know what, you should do that. You figure out how to trap and cut up a bear.
Well, that's the thing. When you look at like survivors, I look at why do you need a leader for survivors? If you have a group of people and each one has their own skills, then they're in charge in that area.
Because we're human. And within groups of humans, alphas emerge. I mean, that's just how it is somebody's going to start saying, okay, we need to do this. It's what's happening in our Skies of Glass game right now. In the A game, there were specific leaders. There wasn't a detailed command structure.
Yeah,
but there was a captain of the ship, which started as Pops, then got passed to
Joe,
and then from Joe somehow ended up with Emily. But in the current one, there isn't. You're a group of convicts. Yet how many situations have ended with a Great Gil compromise? Which, even though the plan usually came from Marlene...
Yeah.
Right. But they end with a great. Well, why does that happen? Well, because Chad's got an alpha personality. So he speaks loudly. He speaks definitively. He steps up and he just sort of runs everyone into a direction. And some people find that very abrasive. But nonetheless, that's the reality of human interaction.
It gets done.
Yeah. But
that's why it matters.
You could have two people in the group that are like that and both getting things done. You could have someone like that, and then everyone else just steps up and says, no, in this case, you're wrong. If it's a case of we've agreed to follow him because he's, or not even agreed, never spoke of, it just people follow him because he has that personality, and suddenly everyone says, no, that's an option that's on the table.
Yeah. And I guess it also depends on exactly what the story is.
Well, in therein lies the story, too.
Yeah.
Because, like in our Skies of Glass game, Gil leads. And out of character, I keep telling the guys, at least up until the point where we're at now, you guys need to call Gil out and not follow him. Gil is a wreck. Gil is a mess. But like Brodor said, he's getting things done. And it's better to have a plan, even if it's a bad one, than no plan.
Bad decision's better than no decision.
Well, and there are a lot of characters doing things that he wouldn't agree with that are just going out there and doing them.
Yeah. And I think it depends upon the scenario in the game.
Yeah, I look at a survivor scenario and I say you kind of break the people up. You know, one person is a really good hunter. They're going to be the one in charge of hunting. And if anything about hunting comes up, they're the one everyone defers to. Mm-hmm. You've got somebody that knows farming. You're going to defer to that person on farming.
And I agree actually with both of you, not to play the center view of it, but I think back to Star Trek and the hierarchy, right? When you play a game like Star Trek, I mean, obviously you can play whatever you want within Star Trek, but if you're going off the shows, you're playing department heads. You're not playing a helmsman, you're playing the helmsman.
Right.
You're not playing an engineer, you're playing the engineer who has people under him. And if you go back to our previous episode on this topic, when you have the leader is not in engineering saying, press that button, turn that dial, build this thing, and then running up to the helm and saying, do this, do this, do this. The hierarchy is there, but there is so much freedom because properly done, the captain should just say, you know what? I want to get to this planet. We have to talk to the Klingons, not start a war.
Yeah.
This guy needs to not get a space STD and
make it so.
Make it so.
Yeah, and yeah. Well, I certainly agree with that. If for no other reason than I think if you have someone that's micromanaging the game, they're making the game profoundly unfun for everyone else. And
there's a story in that.
There is a story.
A temporary story.
Yeah, maybe a very brief story. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I will fully acknowledge where this comes from for me with gaming. I'm looking back at every game I've ever been in for a campaign, and everyone that has had a codified structure chain of command, I can't think of a single strong leader that was in the captain role.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, when it's
never the captain,
when it's just the characters together and they've a leader develops, it has always worked better in every game I've been in. That doesn't mean that's always the case. I know that's not always the case, but that's why I have that personal bias about it, is that I have never been in a game where the command structure actually worked.
Well, and your personal preference for genre fiction is not military sci-fi or fantasy.
Right.
You don't care for that, which is totally legit. That's absolutely cool. So you are not predisposed to getting into that sort of thing.
Yeah. And so it's my bias is coming to it. And I know that entirely.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you admit that and you're willing to work within it.
Yeah.
And we all know this, and we all know what we like and dislike, and we all find the story there. See, because that's the point, is not figuring out who the captain is, because it's not building the optimal team with the right person doing the right thing. That is all the framework, the structure, and the setting. It is finding the story within that.
Yeah, well, and going...
Does Dan want to play a micromanager captain? Well, maybe he has a good idea for that. But like we said a few minutes ago, that's a really great short story.
Yeah, let's talk about micromanaging just for a moment, because it's a topic we've hit several times, and I want to give it its own space here. A leader who is trying to not simply have authority, not to lead, but to control every aspect of what's going on. I mean, one that isn't plausible. You can't be in every place at the same time. You cannot dictate exactly what everyone should do, what everyone should think. It's not really, I think, even just in terms of the economy of time, a realistic thing to do. And as Wayne said, look, I don't care if it's structured command or not. If it's the emergent command of the crash 737, then people may simply say, screw you, we're not doing what you want. You want me as the hunter to go out and kill this thing, but I'm telling you, the nearby wolf pack is a bigger threat. I'm not spending the bullets to go shoot a deer when we're going to have wolves attacking us tonight. Even in a structured military command, mutiny on the bounty ring any bells? I mean, mutiny stories or the captain being sort of written up or reported to a higher level of command for reprimand and review.
I've known people that hated the military structure in games enough that they always played the medical officer, because the medical officer is the one in Star Trek that can relieve a captain of duty.
Yeah.
So no matter what, they were the one in the end that had all of the power.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I've been in some unhealthy game groups.
I've never gamed with those people, but I know those people.
Another thing that I want to say about micromanaging is this is not something that just pops up in character. When we talk to people about their gaming horror stories, about the really bad, toxic, evil sort of gamers that they've interacted with, one of the common, or I think possibly the single most common complaint I have heard is somebody who will not let anyone else play their character. Where, I mean, forget what the game is. It doesn't matter. Let's just go with D&D. There's no command structure here. It's a group of adventurers. You're murder hobos. And whether it's with a new player and they think they're being helpful, but in truth, they're not letting this person learn or discover or grow. They are dictating every action to them, you know, or it's just the condescension of they have a strategy that they think is the best way to go. And so they're going to tell everybody on their turn what they need. You need to cast this spell and you need to be standing here and swing your weapon at this enemy, and either socially overpower somebody to the point that they allow that, or berate and condescend and insult to the point that even if the person does or doesn't comply, either way, they're not having fun. And I've talked to so many people where it took them 2 and 3 tries to actually enjoy the hobby of gaming because this was their experience of these overbearing jackasses. And so I think it's something you don't just have to worry about doing in character, but you also have to watch for people doing out of character as well.
I've seen that at the table when I ran the D&D Adventure Leagues for new players a lot. Sometimes they would be brought by someone else and the other person was trying so hard to help them that they weren't letting them actually play. And that was something I would kind of look out for and make sure they had that spotlight and opportunity to do things themselves without somebody doing that to them. You know, what I find interesting is everyone talks about this for the captain and sometimes maybe even the first officer. Nobody talks about it for the other roles. I'm thinking like engineer. I don't want somebody that can't speak tech talk in the engineer role.
Or fake tech talk.
Fake tech talk, yeah. Unless that's part of the story. Like, I look at Firefly. Kaylee is a great engineer who frequently doesn't speak in tech talk. That is part of her story.
Yeah, she's like a green thumb talking to plants, right? She just has a passion for the machine.
Exactly. But if the person is, say, in Starfleet and they are supposed to know the roles, I don't want somebody that can't talk fake technobabble.
Now, does that boil down to charisma, to personality in the real world? Do you think that generally we don't discuss weapons ops or mechanic or what have you or engineer because those don't require a presence of personality, but captain and first officer do?
I think it's because it's command. You don't look at those others as a command thing. You want to make sure you have the right person in command because you're giving them authority.
Right. Well, I don't think about well, Dan should be the healer, like you guys talked about in 550. Dan should be the healer because he's got a good head for being the healer. But if the mechanics don't matter, are we ever talking about Dan playing the medic? Right? Are we only talking about Dan and Chad as captain and first officer because they have those alpha gamer personalities?
Well, and I think just looking at this in general, you guys are right that there is a hyper focus on the command roles to the exclusion of any concern about whether you've got the right person or the right character for the other roles. And so, Broder, to your point, and by extension to Wayne's point, you know, yeah, we maybe don't talk enough about who ought to be the medic or the doctor or the healer or whatever, because we're so hyper focused on who's going to make the best captain. Is the captain going to destroy the fun of my game? Is the captain this? Is the captain that? And in the process, we just kind of don't care about the other roles. Though when it comes time to make the decisions and to roll the dice, once again, it's not necessarily the captain that's doing it. You know, if we have our crash 737 and you manage to recover from the wreck, one person who's headed on a hunting trip and there's a rifle and a box of 20 rounds, when they go out on their own, and let's say there's the alpha businessman who just sort of took control by personality.
Yeah, you shoot that guy first, right? You use the first sign of cocaine.
There are a lot of guns on this airplane.
No, I'm almost giving one, one.
Like I said, there's a lot of guns on this airplane.
I've been on many flights where I've seen multiple guns coming off the carousel. But even if there's just one, right? Let's just say there's just one. And you give that to the guy who's the camper and the hunter and whatever. When they go out and they see there's elk over here, but there's a wolf pack over there that's starting to take an interest in the plane crash, what they choose to shoot at, it's not the decision of the cokehead stock guy, you know, who's back at the plane site. You know, somebody,
no, that guy's got all the cocaine though.
Well, he does, but somebody still has to make that decision. And he may be so coked up, he thinks he's making all the calls, but that's not, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street back there is not actually running the show in a way that matters.
I've never thought about it, but when you're looking at like these roles, if I have somebody in a game that's a character that's going to be a tinker character, I want someone creative who can come up with really interesting things to have their tinker or build to make a better story.
Well, I disagree. I want, for any role, tinker, medic, captain, commander, whatever, I want what Brodor did for the navigator or the helmsman, I'm sorry, if I'm sitting there as a game master, I don't care if this is a military campaign, I don't care if it's the crashed, you know, airplane thing, I don't care if it's Star Trek or whatever. I want someone like Brodor to sit there and go, Navigator, that's not just, or Helmsman, that's just not pressing buttons. I mean, I'm going to thread that needle, man. I'm gonna, passion.
Yeah.
As a game master, that's what I want. I want, the only problem is when
there's, I will counter that. Pat had a lot of passion for being a wizard. He only cast damn Mistform. I don't want Pat as a wizard because he's going to do the same spell over and over again.
I mean, spoiler alert, Pat's dead.
He's a necromancer. He's dead. And he's a wizard. So he's got you both.
And see what happens when you piss me off with doing the same spell over and over again.
Yeah. Because Wayne.
You gave him fucking cancer.
No.
Because
Wayne's a ginger. He's a spiritual void. He absorbed his life force.
Mm-hmm.
Little by little, his rage absorbed his life force. This is why I have to pray as much as I do. Is I can't annoy Wayne and stay alive without the spirit of God dwelling within
Along
me.
Along the same lines, we knew of this is him as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just using Pat as an example because I started it.
Yeah.
Pat is an engineer. He thinks very logically. Mm-hmm. He thought in pieces and puzzles.
And unlike Pat, I sprinkle brick dust and salt over my doorstep.
He also was someone who would hoard magic spells. He's not going to cast his higher level spells because he might need them later. Something like that, we never talked about it when picking roles for things. But if we're looking for the best story, we talk about who's going to be the leader. We don't talk about who's going to be the wizard or... Mm-hmm. Who's going to be the engineer or something?
Yeah, well, because, I mean, we talked about in 550 why, while it's so attractive, the reluctant, quiet captain is a profoundly bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there's an interesting question
so
here.
So-and-so gets to be captain because everyone wants it except them. And again,
it bombs out.
Yeah, well, and to reiterate what we said on there, the whole reason... Everybody has the quiet person be the captain is because everybody doesn't want to be bossed around.
Well, or I think there's sometimes even a much more benevolent desire of they want to see this person drawn out and, you know, have fun with them in this command role and see them.
It never works.
Yeah, but it never works. It just plain doesn't work. But
and I think that gets back to the passion thing. If the quiet person has a good idea and in their own way has some passion about a leadership character, Game Master, I'm willing to work with that. Now, I might bring up some concerns like, well, you're not a very loud, outspoken character. If they can sell me on the character, that's fine. It is all about who really wants what.
Yeah.
We have played with people who really want to be the engineer. Like you said, Pat always plays a wizard. Always friggin' plays a wizard. He never casts his spells. But you know what? He had a passion for it. He had interesting characters. Mm-hmm. They had really great moments. He never cast a goddamn spell except freaking Mistform. But I don't care about any of that. I really don't.
Right. And we never would have said to him, you're not a fit for that role.
Yeah.
We never would have talked about that role. Well, we only talk about the leader.
If we wind this back a little bit and kind of, you know, zoom out the camera, there's a truth of human socialization, which is on paper, every human being would tell you they want the right person in the right role. You know, if there's a job, they want the best person for. If you're going in for a surgery, you want the best surgeon there.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's taking care of you in the room, you want the best nurse the hospital has.
That's why Lincoln died.
Among other reasons, yeah. But yeah, he did die.
I just assumed it was the bullet to the head.
So the bullet didn't kill him. And so they had the young doctors. They have the young doctors come in who are up on the, at the time, the most advanced medical practices. If you look at those medical practices that those younger doctors knew, Lincoln could have been saved. Now, he would have been an invalid and there would have been all kind of problems, but he would have lived. He wouldn't have been president, probably wouldn't have been able to speak, but he would have lived. They brought in the Surgeon General, his political post. He was a real doctor and he was an old ass man and his medical training stopped years ago when he stopped practicing medicine, got into politics, and he was like one step above bleeding and leeches. And, well, I won't get into the gory details of what happened, but basically this guy killed Lincoln.
Yeah, unintentionally.
Unintentionally.
But yeah, he finished the job
that. I don't know what my point is with that.
Well, okay, but
it's that we should purge the elderly. It really is about that Logan's Run is a bridge too far, but there is a reason.
Aren't we kind of doing that right now?
There isn't.
Wouldn't all of our gyms be flashing red conspiracy theories,
dude? But yeah, that's
okay. If I can get this back under control just a little bit before this turns into Mine Boot.
I did not say the H word.
I'm not saying anything.
I just like how you could poke Broder and out comes conspiracy theory.
Or you walk past him. The wind shifts. All right. Yeah. But
I'm just telling you that a lot of old people got killed on purpose in New York. That's all I'm saying.
All of us have been in situations, and I don't care where it's at. I don't care if it's at work. I don't care if it's in social club. I don't care if it's in whatever, your church, your bowling team. We've all seen situations where the wrong person ended up in a job. That's a reality of how life works. But at least the intended goal from the outset was to put the right person there. Somebody, now maybe mistakenly, but somebody believed that when they were assembling this team, they were putting the proper personalities and skill sets in those roles. When I interviewed at the bank, our boss did not interview me and say, you know what? Dan's a great programmer and all this stuff. So we're going to make him the head of customer service because that's going to make a really interesting work day.
That's going to be an interesting story.
Yeah.
And it would be an interesting story.
Yeah, precisely. But that's not how, you know, they were looking for a programmer. So they looked for somebody who had the personality, who had the skills, who had the work experience of a programmer. All right. I'd like to think I'm a good fit. Ultimately, that's somebody else's job to determine. But the point is that I can look at everyone I work with, and I would say that most people there are at least a generally good fit for the job they have. Now, there are a few people that are wildly out of their depth or out of their element, but that's the exception. And so I think there is a certain amount of fairness going back way back to what Wayne was saying about giving this kind of thought to other jobs of saying both in terms of the player and the character, do we have the person who was going to make the best engineer as the ship's mechanic? And I am not so rigid in that. I'm not some, I don't know, min-maxing metagamer. And Chad, I do see the validity of what you're saying, that sometimes somebody being in a job they're really not cut out for, they don't quite like, or they're not yet ready for, you know, maybe they have to kind of grow into that role, makes for a great story. But I certainly, and I'm not saying you were doing this, but I just want to make the point that I personally would not use that as a dogma of we're going to do this like just tiles in a bag of when you reach in, oops, looks like you got the medic. Never mind that you wanted to be the engineer. You're going to be the medic anyway, and you're going to suck at it. And that's going to be a great story. And by the way, everyone's going to suck at everything they're doing. And this isn't a comedy game. You know, if this was Lasers and Feelings, that'd be hilarious. But no, we're trying to run a serious game here of, I don't know, like Delta Green or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we can't do it because there's just total show going on. And something else I want to talk about that Chad mentioned in a section that got cut in editing. So our Patreon people, our Patreon people will hear it, but you guys
there.
The rest of you guys are hearing it now for the first time.
Yeah, Chad was actually on the last episode. You wouldn't know it unless you had the Patreon.
Wow. But wow, guys.
On 550, there's some chat.
But one of the things that Chad was talking about is the lateral shifts or even vertical shifts that occur in the situation. And the example you were giving was the movie Aliens.
The Space Marines too. Yeah. The second Aliens movie. I mean, it's all about a hierarchy, but it's about the ins and outs of the hierarchy, right? So you have the sergeant, as Dan was saying earlier, you know, he's the real leader. He's the guy who's really in charge. You have the lieutenant, who's never done a drop before, real one. He's never been in combat before. He knows the rule book backwards and forwards, and that's it. He's not even on the ground with his troops.
He ends up getting most of the group killed by giving off orders that the...
But he does shoot Burke. I think he shoots Burke.
That the sergeant enforces.
Yeah.
Of, you know, unloading the guns.
Well, the neat thing about that situation, right? So you have a higher... I mean, this is Marines, right? This is... You know, you have your specialists and your corporals, you have your privates, you have your sergeants, you have your lieutenants, you have orders from high command. You know, you have highly trained, but they're also like a...
You got that hot ass Vasquez with that smart gun.
Vasquez is actually the best character in the entire franchise.
Vasquez.
Well, Vasquez is really neat because she illustrates this point, right? So you have this rigidity, right? You have this... It's like, okay, these people are in command, these people are doing this jobs, these people are doing that. So what happens when the Marines start going through before they first encounter the aliens? You know, they're by the power cores or whatever, and then it's like, oh, well, if the straight shot's going to blow everybody up. It's like, okay, well, turn in your ammunition. Everyone's like, what the, you know.
Spoilers.
Yeah, on a movie that was made like, what, 1982 or something.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about spoilers for a movie that was made last week. So they start collecting all the ammunition. And the smart guns, right, have these little electronic things.
Basically like a little battery charge thing.
Yeah. Some kind of power receiver.
Yeah, sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
And so look at what happens after
that. Yeah, they're insubordinate.
Everybody's grumbling. Everybody doesn't like. Everybody's expressing feelings. So Vasquez, you know, this is why she's the best character in the whole series, right? It's just like Vasquez is the pirate. She is a pirate. She doesn't give a shit about command, and she's good at her job, and she'll slit your throat. And the sergeant comes in, makes this horrible order, brought down from lieutenant, and she looks at him, smiles, hands over the thing, and then her buddy, I don't even know if this guy has a name, right? He has like three lines
in the
whole thing.
The other smart gun operator, yeah.
You know, the other smart gun operator. He's the one who gets sprayed with acid later. And it's just their dynamic is awesome, and she looks at him, she just tilts her hand, her face doesn't change, and her eyes look up at him, and she pulls out another fuse and hands it to him, and he says, good old Vasquez.
Yeah, got it. That just boner-inducing, whimpery cry thing that just...
See, I don't know about the unleashed sexual aspect of that. I'm not really getting that, but that's what I'm saying. And then you have the classic line of Hicks, I think it is, Hicks, pulls out the shotgun. He's like, I keep this for close encounters. Great joke, 80s aliens movie. But it just shows that there is such a rigid chain of command, an absolute impenetrable structure, and that structure creates the story. It creates the forces on the characters that motivate them, that hold them back, that crush them, basically. Yeah. Do bad
and
things
yet they
to them,
still express themselves within that.
It's like forcing something through a sieve. You know, it's like you have a good character and you force it through the sieve and it like changes and it's different.
Well, what and are, also you see some kind of lateral shifting because as...
Now, that said, I don't think Aliens is like Shakespeare or anything.
Right, but it illustrates the point.
I have no frame of reference. I've never seen it.
But you get some lateral shifting within the order because as people either die or fail at their roles or go into shell shock.
Hey, Hicks, anybody ever mistake you for a man? Oh, no.
Hey, Vasquez. Hey, Vasquez,
ever mistake you for a man? No, Hicks, anybody ever mistaken
no,
you for a man?
Have you ever been mistaken for a man? No, have you?
Yeah. And they shift those roles and people start moving into roles they didn't originally have because the story just sort of makes that happen. You know, in a Star Trek game, you could have something like you're dealing with a biological threat or an entity or something like that. And the medical staff gets wiped out, but the science officer has the relevant skills in biology. And so they kind of end up becoming the de facto ship's doctor. And because the captain doesn't know anything about the situation, they're still technically in charge, but they're effectively deferring all command decisions to the science officer.
Like in Aliens, though, the coolest thing about a command structure, super rigid, absolutely defined. Before we even start playing the game, everything is written on the character sheet and defined. The greatest thing about the command structure is what happens in Aliens. It disintegrates.
Yeah.
Like you said, people switch roles. Well, we got to do this. Like, well, the lieutenant has to tell us to. Lieutenant is comatose. His entire team is dead.
Right.
Well, you're not in command. I'm the guy with the gun, you know?
Right.
It's
yeah, well, and also...
That is the great story.
Once they realize that the situation is what it is, who's really in charge anyway?
Yeah.
Ridley, right? Mm-hmm. So you look
because at, she's actually the expert.
You look at this as an RPG on paper, and if, you know, the person who's playing the lieutenant would say, well, clearly I'm in charge, mm-hmm. right?
And he says that multiple times.
Yeah, clearly that's the person in charge, and they're going to tell everyone what to do. And if it's not the lieutenant, it's the guy playing the hard-ass sergeant. But the moment they get contact and they realize she's the only person who knows what's going on and she's right, suddenly Ridley is in command of basically everything.
Yep.
Except the handful of technical tasks that have to fall to the android. Because he's the only one capable of making those actions.
Who's
like it? Where he climbs the vents and such.
Who's at their desk right now pounding their cubicle saying it's Ripley with a P?
Oh, did I say Ridley?
You did.
Ridley is Metroid.
Yeah.
Well, it is also Ridley Scott.
Ridley That's Scott, also fair. Yeah.
So,
which by the way, I mean, talk about a human being who should be stored in a tiger cage.
I did that wrong in the last episode, too, or in 550, not the last episode, but in 550. Because I kept calling True Dungeon Real Dungeon.
Yeah.
I know. So I put a note about that in the show notes.
That's just nice to know that you have an Achilles heel.
Yeah. Well, yes, I do. But you are correct. It is Ripley, not Ridley. I'm thinking
the movie by Ridley Scott.
It is Ridley Scott, but the character is Ripley. Ellen, was it Ellen or Eileen? Because there's both. So it's Ellen Ripley.
It is.
Oh.
Because they do a follow-up with an Eileen Ripley. That's her daughter, but whatever. Okay, side story. But, yeah, I think the Aliens is a great example of... I mean, it kind of ties back to what Wayne was talking mm-hmm. about earlier about how sometimes you don't get what's actually going to play out until you've taken the characters out for a spin.
Well, and how many times at your place of employment have you been disappointed and even alarmed by the people who've been placed in positions of authority, right? I mean, I must imagine that this is true in other scientific and military structures, that it's about who you know, your sort of familial connections, friend connections, it's birthing, etc.
You're right. I mean, I see it all the time. Well, in some places more than others in the corporate world. But I don't think my current place of employment is as egregious about this as some of the previous places I've worked. But oftentimes what horrifies me more is not who's in charge. And this ties back yet again to something Wayne was saying. It's who they assign to a task. Sometimes the fact that they put the wrong worker bee, it's not the fact that the hospital administrator is unqualified. It's the fact that the doctor doing the cutting is unqualified. And, you know, apply that to a technical job and you get the idea.
Right. But even then, someone had to make the decision to put that particular doctor in charge. And what's the dynamic of their relationship? Right?
Well, what's the dynamic of the relationship everyone with them? I mean, people rightfully resent that, you know, not because they're jealous, but because they're concerned. So I
was thinking about like command structures and stuff and about how like there's a really good story in having a command structure, and the greatest story about a command structure is when it falls apart. And I think that's true, but I was thinking that the more the command structure falls apart, the shorter the game is, the less sustainable the game is. And I don't even mean like
especially if you can't recover it.
Well, yeah, it's in like a game like Aliens, or not a game, like the movie Aliens. I mean, the whole thing completely disintegrated and almost no one made it out alive. That's a pretty extreme example of the hierarchy falling apart. You can have it fall apart in less ways and less so, but the more it falls, it's like this balancing act for the game master, right? The more it falls apart, the more interesting and moving the story is. The shorter the game's going to be because the group dynamic is splitting, the band's breaking up.
It can be. I think it depends upon the group because we saw that in the Skies of Glass game when the second ship's captain, Joe, got killed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you guys went back to the ship, there was nobody, figuratively, at the helm.
When Joe's character died, I spent the entire rest of the game thinking about making a new character. Because Joe was Lee's moral compass, aww, and I did not think I would be able to continue to play Lee.
Yeah,
and you know what? Lee went to some very bad places.
There were conversations that, well, what would Joe do? Mm-hmm. Well, Joe's not here. He's dead. It doesn't matter what Joe would do.
And we had an interesting confluence of characters that every one of them had a specific reason to refuse to be captain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lee was, he had already been, mm-hmm, you know, in St. Louis and he had all of this baggage. And he was the type of character that didn't want to make a decision. He wanted it to be on someone else's head. Philip, from the beginning, has been running from his responsibilities. He's not going to step up to be captain at that point. You know, it took the entire campaign for him to step up and start telling people to do. It was, he
and you
wasn't
guys
ready.
Got around it by making a non-choice. Because since you couldn't figure out who ought to be captain,
we gave it to Emily.
You gave it to Emily, and yet, despite the fact that Emily was getting increasingly loud and belligerent, who was actually the captain?
Alejandro.
The guy who actually knows. I mean, he's kind of like the sergeant. He is the head of the half dozen crewmen that run the ship, who technically has no authority, but he's the one that knows how the boat works and how the river works and how to get it from one place to another. He knows the business better than anybody else does. And so while Emily is ostensibly in charge and is walking around, you know, being obnoxious, Alejandro, who hardly even speaks, is the one that's actually running the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just sort of fell to an inevitability of, you know, the one person who had the closest skill set ended up with it. It's nature abhors a vacuum, and so does human sociology. And so it just sort of filled itself. But I think we're going to wrap this one up. I don't know, maybe we'll come back to command stuff at some point again in the future. But I think for now, we've covered what we wanted to, both in the prior episode, 550, which was about specifically captains, and this one, which was more about group structure and roles in general.
Which this one was us really trying hard not to talk about the captain.
More about captains.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that says something more than what we said in two episodes.
That there is a hyperfixation on that role.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, a lot of stuff to think about in there. And check the show notes for links to Brodor's show. And is the AP going to be on the same link at goinfo.org?
So the AP, yes, the AP will be on the same link. I don't know when we're going to drop the first episode because I've been doing a lot of conversion
work. So
all your stuff
that's not Fear the Boot can be found on goinfo.org.
Everything, yeah. Anything, Brodor, just go to my website. I'm paying for a website. So if you want to don't call my phone. Just send me a comment through my website. That's what we'll do.
All right.
Yeah, and Wayne, I will do my game notes about multi-command because Band of Blades has a very deliberate multi-command phase of the game that you do. And so that's what I'm going to discuss for my game notes.
And Wayne, what is Game Notes real quick?
Game Notes is a weekly Patreon exclusive podcast that has now been going since March or so. On episode, I believe I dropped 26 this week, maybe 27. And it has been consistent, no delays, every Monday, 9 a.m. since.
Now, Wayne, I got to tell you, is this for even the lowest of $1 backers?
Nope, starts at the $5 level.
All right, so this is special inside stuff. This is premium content.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of episodes by me. There's been an episode by Dan. There's were two by Chad, one by Chris Hussey. Michael Matthews did one for me. Adam Gottfried, Adam and Laura did a drunken episode for me that I refused to edit.
Oh, right on.
I don't know that I'd attempt, so.
I'm going to do a sober episode and a not sober episode.
All right, so check the show notes for links to all that. And otherwise, have a great week and great games, and we will catch you on the next one.
Yeah.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2020. Listeners are free to use this episode in a non-commercial endeavor, so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. If you wish to support this show and its related endeavors, you can do so at patreon.com/feartheboot.